My name is Stan Corley. I'm a family physician in Oklahoma City. And the thing I'm using time, I think one of the reasons I got interested in this is because it's so difficult for me. It's a daily battle. This stuff I do not have wired. But at least I have some things here to tell you what I'm deviating from. So we'll go through this. When I was in medical school, about my first or second year, I got a letter from a fella who knew me in college, and he had just started seminary, and by this time he was married, and he wrote me a letter that just was halfway in desperation, and he said, "Stan, I just need your advice on a couple of things," and one of those, he said, was on how to use my time, and he described his situation as time crunch, and he had seen me just booking it, beating my brains out to try to get grades so I can get into medical school. So he figured that I'd somehow learn how to use my time well. So we planned to get together and just sit down, look over his situation, and come up with some practical things on how he could use his time better. And as time would have it, we didn't have time to get together, you know. So what I did, I thought, well, you know, I need to tell him something. So I wrote him a letter. And in that letter, I told him to do four things. If he do those four things, it absolutely revolutionizes life. And I'll tell you later that we're going to talk about some other things. Why don't we pray, and then we'll launch ahead. Father, thank you for this conference, for the just the excitement of watching your people interact with each other. Lord, just the evidence of seeing just your body and seeing your presence among us. We really appreciate that. But we really want to honor you. But I pray that with this workshop that you'll not make us mechanics when we're using time, but you'll make us artisans and just really skillful in how to manage opportunities and to really be recognized as your children. We pray that you will teach us. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, some things on time, some characteristics. Time is short. You know, it continues whether we want it to or not. And, you know, you can't save time. You can't put it into any kind of an account. You will spend it. The choice you have is how you spend it. In Ephesians 5, why don't you turn to that? Ephesians 5, verses 15 through 20. Is talking to these Christians at Ephesus about the spirit-controlled or the spirit-filled Christian life. And in verse 15 of chapter 5, he says, "Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is." And he goes on to talk about, don't get drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit. You know, seeing to yourselves, teaching each other. And it's just an integral part of the Christian life, using your time wisely. In Proverbs 10:27, in the Living Bible, it says, "Reverence for God adds hours to each day. So how can the wicked expect a long, good life?" And in Proverbs 9:11, it says, "For I, wisdom, will make the hours of your day more profitable and the years of your life more fruitful." Now, the facts are that most of us do not use our time wisely. The problem is not with time, the problem is with us. So what we'll do is work on us in this seminar. Basically, we cover it in three sections. First is just establishing priorities. Secondly is setting goals. And thirdly is learning some of the practical how-tos in managing our time. Now, you will get a handout with the things I'm saying, references, so if you miss something, don't panic. Okay? So you'll get this. I just want you to listen first. Priorities. A basic working definition of a priority is first things first. That's what it means, prior. Something that comes prior to something else. What do you think our very first top-notch priority ought to be in our lives? God, right. Personal walk with God. A relationship with Him. Now, God values a man or a woman not based on an education or our economic status or a family name or any of that stuff. He values us by our heart. In Acts 13:22, just a comment about David. God said, "I found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my heart, who will do all my will." And that was God's a comment on David as far as his claim to fame, but his heart. In Proverbs 4:23, it says, keep your heart, or guard your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life, or out of it flow the issues of life. That's where everything begins. In Mark 7:21-22, Jesus himself, you know, talked about just a real true religion. And he was talking about dietary laws. He said, it's not what goes in you, but from within, out of the heart of men, proceed the evil thoughts and fornications, thefts, murders, adulteries, deeds of coveting and wickedness, as well as deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. But all of it, junk, you know, comes from the heart. So if it all begins at the heart, that's where we have to place the number one priority, especially with God. That's our advantage, to have a heart for God. In 2 Chronicles 16:9, it says, for the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of him. His heart is perfect for him. God wants to show himself strong on your behalf. The greatest commandment. Do you recall what that was? Do you remember when Jesus was asked about this? He said, well, someone asked him, what is the great commandment? Do you remember? What did he say? Yeah. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. And then he said the second commandment, next in line, is love your neighbor as yourself. But Jesus himself, you know, said that is the number one priority in life. Now, one of the best practical methods I know of for developing that heart relationship with him is a daily quiet time, a daily devotion time, daily watch, you know, whatever you call that. It's a time where you spend some time reading God's word and then praying back to him. In Acts 33:11, we get a glimpse of Moses and his relationship to God. And it says, thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face, just as a man speaks to his friend. You know, wouldn't you like to be a friend of God? You know? He called Abraham a friend of God. In Psalm 17, verse 15, in the Living Bible, we get just a glimpse of the psalmist's heartthrob, what really made him tick. And he said, but as for me, my contentment is not in wealth, but in seeing you and knowing all is well between us. And when I awake in heaven, I shall be fully satisfied. I shall see you face to face. In Psalm 73, verses 25 and 26, again, the psalmist is talking about his heart. He said, whom have I in heaven but thee? And besides thee, I desire nothing on earth. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Which is where his heartthrob was. He had a heart relationship with God. Now, it is possible to be very religious but not have a heart relationship with God. One of the kings, King Amaziah, in 2 Chronicles 25:2, there's a little capsule about his character. And it said he did what was right, but not with a perfect heart. In the Living Bible, it says he did what was right, but sometimes resented it. And have you ever done that? You know, doing what you knew was right, and then kind of grit your teeth at God? You know? That could really happen. Hopefully you work through that, because you can't fake it forever. You eventually will go where your heart is. And you can't fake it forever. So get it nailed down with the first priorities with God. Second priority ought to be our family. In Psalm 101, verse 2, in the Living Bible, it says, I will try to walk a blameless path, but how I need your help, especially in my own home, where I long to act as I should. Psalm 101, verse 2. If you're married, your spouse ought to be your number one earthly ministry. Two have become one. You can't undo that. Children, if you have parents, some basic rules. When under roof, under authority, if they're paying the bills, it means you do what they say. When you move away from home, you're always under their counsel. You know, if you shun their counsel, you're robbing yourself of a tremendous resource. In Proverbs 13, verse 1, in the New English Bible, it has an interesting twist in that little verse. It says, a wise son sees the reason for his father's correction. An arrogant man will not listen to rebuke. There was a time when my dad told me to quit reading the Bible. And my dad's a Christian. He told me to, you know, quit reading the Bible, you know. And what was happening then is that I was working evenings, a night shift,
So I'd get home like around midnight. And then on the weekend, when I was working the Friday night shift, I wanted to have my quiet time the next morning, you know, and shower and shave. So my dad would see me about 10:30 in the morning, you know, on my bed, reading my Bible, having my quiet time. And he had worked in the cars, and had been straightening up the yard, cutting the hedge from around the yard, and he asked me to help him. I said, I'll give him a quiet time first, Dad, you know. And then after a little while of that, he finally saw me in the bed reading the Bible and said, son, don't you think you're reading that a little too much? Don't you think I'd read something else, you know? And he knew there was something wrong, but he didn't quite know how to tell me. Didn't know quite what the problem was completely. What he really meant was, son, you're being lazy. And you can get your quiet time another time, but I need your help. Well, what he said was, well, you know, basically quit reading the Bible. It helped me. My first reaction was, boy, Dad, how pagan can you be? You know, tell me to quit reading the Bible. I'd had someone give me some advice on this. So I thought, okay, what's he really trying to say? Now, I thought, okay, what's the reason? What's the reason for this correction? And if you can look, just look at what they're aiming at. You know, what is they really trying to get across? What are they aiming at? And then a wise son or daughter can see the reason, you know, for the correction. But if you're arrogant, you're not going to listen. But don't take that too lightly. It's a valuable resource. Another thing you can do, one of the best things you can do for your parents, besides telling them you love them and expressing gratitude, is to get along with your brothers and sisters. Psalm 133, verse 1, says, behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. They'll love that. And for those of you who are parents, basically love your children. Word for Coffee has done a seminar on children. How many of you went to that? Yeah, good course. Basically, some ways to love them. One is by disciplining them. Another is to give them God's heritage. Another is to be an example. And as I grew up, my father said one thing several times to us. He said, you know, son, somebody told me one time the best thing I can do for my boys is to love their mother. And so we grew up with my dad loving our mother. And we, you know, really got the payoff from that. You know, and the home, another reason why it's the second priority is that it's the best personal proving ground for having a truly effective ministry. Even Paul, when he gave Timothy advice on how to set up a church, he told him how to select the leaders. In 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 13, he gave him a list of those things. And in verses 4 and 5, he says this, he must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? So man, you know, would your children nominate you to serve on the church board or a deacon or whatever? Would they come to hear you teach or preach? How long to act as I should have. Third priority would be your job. And let me explain why. When we work for an employer, or if we're self-employed and agree for contracts with people, what we're doing is saying, I'll do this work for this much payment or whatever the terms are. We make an agreement. Now, if you thought, well, I'm supposed to be at 8 o'clock, I'm supposed to be at work at 8, but you know, today I just think I'd spend some more time in the Psalms. And so you show up at 11:30 and say to your boss, well, I just thought I'd just be spending some more time in the Psalms today, you know? He's going to have a hard time with that. And you've broken your agreement, your contract. And reading the Psalms is good, but the circumstance is wrong. You know, there's a time for that. But you've broken the agreement. The job also is an arena. It can develop into an arena for ministry. 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 11 and 12. Paul says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet and godly life. You don't have to cheat. And attend to your own business and work with your hands just as we commanded you, so that you may behave properly toward outsiders and not be in any need. One of the things that non-Christians are looking to you for is to see that you're honest in your business dealings and that you're able to provide for your own family, that you're not lazy. You know, they're looking for that. Also, in Zechariah 8:23 is a little picture of an attractive life. This is talking about the end times and the Jews. It says, in those days it shall come about that 10 men shall take hold out of all the languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. Can you imagine that? You're having 10 people grabbing at your coattail and just saying, what? I just heard you're Christian. God blesses you. I just want to hang around and just see what you like, you know? And that'll happen, especially when they watch you as you react and the way you deal with your job. And the facts are, from God's perspective, that we really are employed by God. Colossians 3, 23 and 24 says, and whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord we shall receive the inheritance. In other words, God signs your paycheck. And if you're working for God and you're bored with your job, it may be that you're serving the wrong master. You know? One solution is to serve him. Do it heartily. And are you under hard conditions on your job? Is it really tough? It may be possibly one of two things. It may be God is indicating to you to change your job. But more likely, it may be that God's wanting to change you. And give him the chance to do that by responding to him. There's a book called Your Job, Survival or Satisfaction by Jerry White. If you haven't read that, it's excellent. It helps you find your work situation and how it relates scripturally, how you can serve him. Now, those first three priorities help prepare us for the following priority, which would be a personal ministry. In Solomon, Song of Solomon, first chapter, verse 6, one of his maids says, do not look upon me because I am swarthy or sunburned, for the sun has burned me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me caretaker of the vineyards, but I've not taken care of my own vineyard. You know, and we can be dashing about, you know, telling other people how they ought to live their lives, and then they look at us and say, well, why aren't you doing that? You know? So then we're in a position of having to say, well, do as I say, don't do as I do. So if we got those first three things wired, or at least making an honest effort in growing in those, then we qualify to impart our lives to others. Well, there's a difference in imparting information and imparting your life. And where you can put stuff from your notebook in someone else's notebook, or you can impart your life to them. In 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 8, Paul said, "For and having thus a fond affection for you, we were well pleased to impart unto you not only the gospel, but also our own lives, because you'd become very dear to us." The Christian life is mostly caught rather than taught. So be prepared. There is power in multiplication. Gene talked today about Isaiah 60:22, about a little one to become a thousand. Man, if you feel like you are a little one, you qualify. All it takes is one person working with one person. That will grow and it will multiply. God will honor that. There are two books. One is called The Master Plan of Evangelism by Robert Coleman. He talks about how Jesus, you know, just himself prepared these men to multiply. There's a little booklet called How Jesus Trained Leaders. You probably won't be able to find this in a bookstore. The only place I know that publishes that right now is the University of Oklahoma Baptist Student Union. But their address is on the front of his handout, and you can ask them for that. It's called How Jesus Trained Leaders. Excellent. Now, these first four priorities, I think, are pretty solid. The ones that I'll suggest after this may be a little more loose, or it's more difficult to stack them. But I'll just suggest an order to follow. The fifth thing would be social relationships. Proverbs 25, verse 1 says, a good name is to be more desired than great riches. Favor is better than silver and gold. So there's something very, very valuable about having a good name. But the danger in that is that we can try to curry men's favor or just serve people's opinions. In Proverbs 29, 25, it says, the fear of man bringeth a snare, but whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe. And when you identify yourself with Jesus Christ, there are some people who are just not going to like you. And it may be that you just have to choose the right enemies. You know? So, social relationships. You guys really look tired. Okay, next, body and health. Four basic areas that are body. Yeah, I hear the groans. First is recreation or recreation. It was God's idea to choose one day out of seven to get to know him better, to put your work aside and rest. You know, you will get rest. It may be in the hospital, but you will get rest. Yeah. Another thing, as far as diet, diet means your eating habit. It doesn't mean you're trying to lose weight. It just means your pattern of eating. Basic thing is just eat sensibly. There are all kinds of fad diets, but the best rule is to eat sensibly. Another thing is exercise. Rather than these habits. We are God's temple. Seventh priority would be money and possessions. That means being stewards. We're entrusted with someone else's property. You know, the way that we handle our money and our possessions in a real way helps qualify us for eternal responsibility. Luke 16, verses 10 through 12. It says, for he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. And he that is unfaithful in the least is faithful also in much. If you've not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? There is a sense in that we qualify ourselves for eternal responsibility by how we deal with those things now, money and possessions. Now, a list of priorities is intended to be a tool. This is not something that it's like building blocks, that there's no flexibility built into this. But you'll find that these different areas may have conflicts. And when you find conflicts among these, then this helps you make decisions among what takes precedence. That's what it's for. Why don't you stand up? This is something that I've learned to use with a quiet time. It helps me to keep my mind on what I'm doing. And one of the things is to keep some kind of a daily log to write down thoughts that God might give me during my quiet time. I heard a lady say that impression without expression leads to depression. It's helpful to have a notebook, a place to keep record of what you're praying for. Here's a place of some medical students. My partner and I, we're getting together with just a few guys at the medical school. And we're praying for all the students in the first year class. So each of us has divided them up and pray for one of them a day. And just a way to keep lists of people that you pray for and things that you pray for. And there's a calendar, a reading plan. It's nicknamed the Australian Bible Reading Plan that can get you through the Bible in a year just by reading three chapters a day. I recommend that. Some kind of a plan. Speaking of which, second portion is goals. It's been said that if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. And if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. A goal basically is a finish line of a race. That's what you're aiming for, just the finish line. An example, Jesus had some definite goals. There was one point in his ministry where it says Jesus turned his face toward Jerusalem. The people around him knew what he was doing and knew where he was going. They tried to talk him out of it. They warned him. But they knew what he had in mind. And he did not deviate from it. He had a goal. And he followed it through. There are different types of goals. There are life goals. There are long-range goals, intermediate goals, just immediate goals. There are different time frames. Then there are different areas in your life. In Luke 2:52, it says, "And Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and men." Basically, four areas. He grew in wisdom, that's intellectually. He grew in stature, that's physically. He grew in favor with God, that's spiritual. And he grew in favor with men, which is social. Basically, four areas. In that worksheet, with a little questionnaire, one of those questions was, if you could stand by your graveside at the end of your life and look back, what would you want your life to have meant? When I started college, my pre-med advisor, the first week, I heard he was really mean and really hard. So I sat across his desk and he said, "What would you like written on your tombstone?" I thought, "Oh, I didn't know he's that mean, you know." What he was driving at is that, why do you want your life to count for? And that was just something to help him understand that. If you can answer that question, then you have a real basis for establishing some goals for your life. Now, the worksheet that you have is something that John Repass developed, and something that we've kind of used, several of us have used over the last few years, to look at the coming year and formulate goals. This is going to have to be homework, because this will take some time for you to go through this. The parentheses is to put down estimated amount of time that it will take you to accomplish that. And to work through all these different areas. And at the very back, it says priority goals. What that means is that under these major areas, you know, you can come up with some tremendous goals for lots of this stuff. But this means these are the things I really intend to do. I really am going to do these. The others I'd like to do, but I really am going to do these. This is the back page. You know, we measure ourselves by our goals. Other people measure us by our accomplishments. And that's the reason for goals, to accomplish things. When you think of it, you know, what are you giving your life to? There are lots of things you can give your life to. It's really possible to have a love affair with money. It really is, to have your affections and desires really set on that. There's lots of opportunities for it. In Luke 12:15, Jesus said, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has abundance does his life consist of his possessions." In 1 John 2:15-16, it says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." Another way to say that is pleasures, possessions, and positions. Or cars, QDs, and cash. You know, lots of things you can give your life to. Francis Schaeffer has said that in the Western culture today, there are two prevailing values that we as a culture are giving ourselves to. The first is personal peace. That means that nobody's bothering me. That leave me alone, let me do my thing, don't rock my boat. And the second thing is affluence. That means having our necessities, having our needs met, and then having luxuries too. And it's not that those are wrong or bad, but they become values, things we give our lives to. Well, investing involves placing something of value where it will increase its value. For those of you who are businessmen, you know that you look for a good deal, one that's safe and gives lots of return. There are two things that are eternal. Do you know what those are? Two things that will last forever. First is men's souls, and the second is the Word of God. And if you invest yourself in those, you will have eternal dividends from that. You know, what will you give your life to? What's your battle plan? Hudson Taylor was a missionary to China, and he said, "The best use of a life is to give it in exchange for something that outlasts it." Jim Elliot was another missionary who was killed in South America by people he was ministering to. And he said, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." Now, what are you giving your life to? Set down some goals. Third section, practical helps, nitty-gritty, using time. Yes, you will get more handouts. You'll have a veritable library when you leave. Those are the same. Under practical helps. First thing to do is to learn to distinguish the important from the urgent. There's a little booklet called The Tyranny of the Urgent. Have any of you seen that little book? Have you ever watched this book? It's called The Tyranny of the Urgent. I'm at the section Roman numeral 4, which says practical helps. You can follow me. Practical helps, how to use your time. Letter A, learn to distinguish the important from the urgent. Now, there's no problem on doing the things that are urgent. You know, if you don't plan your time, somebody else will. And you'll find yourself being run by things that are urgent. Just got to have it done now. And then wind up getting the important things and neglecting the important things, like having time alone with God each day. That's important. And you can get busy, frantically busy, and neglect that and miss it. Worry. One definition of worry is taking on responsibilities God never meant for us to have, or doing those in the wrong way. And if you serve the urgent, you can very well leave the important things undone and live a life of worry. A second tip is to plan your time. I mean, really do it. Plan it. Set it down on paper. Proverbs 11:14 in the English Bible says, "For want of skillful strategy, an army is lost, but victory is the fruit of long planning." Proverbs 11:14. On the back of your handout, there's a grid. And I was introduced to this while I was in college. And when I felt that my schedule was confusing, I couldn't make any sense of it, I took out this little schedule and began to block out time and how I used it. I started using colored pencils just because it was a little more creative. And for spiritual activities, I'd use red because I thought, well, you know, the blood of Christ, that's kind of appropriate, so I use red. You know. So I blocked that time. I was obligated with church. My quiet time was a Bible study. And just block out that time because it's committed time. And then work, the times that I'd be at work, I'd block it out. That's committed time. Also, for sleep, I drew a little green line, and I've been the only reason for choosing green. I've just done that. And under the line, I wrote a bedtime, like it's on Wednesday. If I got to bed at 11, I'd get 6 hours and 45 minutes of sleep. If I got to bed at 11:30, I'd get 6 hours and 15 minutes. If I went to bed at midnight, I'd have 5 hours and 45 minutes. Just so I can look at this thing and see what price I'm paying by staying up later. Just a way to help you have some quality control, you know, your time. A way to work at it. If you put it on paper, it will help you plan it and get a grasp on what it is. Another thing, if we're using your time, is some portable things. This is a day timer. And most, I think, business stores, office supplies have these. And it's a calendar, a way to plan your time. You can put down appointments in it. This is one thing that's helpful. The one thing that I use is called a 7-star mini diary. And it's a wallet, but in it has a diary where I can put down appointments, the things I need to get done. And it has a planning calendar, even a thing for keeping cash, you know, spend it, car maintenance, phone numbers, just different things. But it's really helpful. It combined about 3 different books into one, and it saved me a lot of extra fumbling. One other tip is to write down phone numbers that you call frequently. There are several hospitals that I have under H, and I have all the hospital numbers in Oklahoma City right here. You know, so I don't have to go to the phone book or call information. I just get in, punch it in, and get to the hospital. And especially lists like that can save you a lot of time. It'll make you a resource person. People say,
Hey, what's the phone number? He's always on. You know, you got it. We'll help you and help you save time. There also is another sheet that's kind of ragged on the back. Looks like this. This shows what you can do with just a ruler and a pencil. This is just a stack of weeks. And you can come up with a long-term planning calendar just with a pencil and paper. And put things down here on a flow of weeks. Now you can buy calendars also at Business Supply. There's some like this. This is a photocopy, but they have monthly planning calendars. There's one of these on a bulletin board downstairs, just a monthly planning calendar. And you can put important dates and long-term planning. This is a thing a few of us had planned some ministry activities up until next Christmas. We just sat down and planned the year. So we have some things already there to try to avoid conflicts with other things. But the long-term planning will help you organize your time to get some things done. There's lots of different formats, but use something that works. Another thing is sleep. There's verse 127, verse 2. This is under help for hindrances. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, and to eat the bread of painful labors. For the Lord gives his beloved even in his sleep. Psalm 127, verse 2. So, now you need sleep. But you can't get too much. Proverbs 20, verse 13, it says, do not love sleep, lest you become poor. Open your eyes, and you shall be satisfied with food. And then one that's really painful is Proverbs 26, 14. It says, as the door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard on his bed. You know, just turning back and forth, spending an hour and a half getting out of bed. You know. Other things that I'm guilty of, about starting projects late at night. Here it is, 10:30, and, you know, I just have to kind of get this chair fixed, you know, and take it apart, put it all back together, and kind of get into bed late. Another thing will really help you to get to bed. There's a button on the TV that says on and off. Can't you? You know, turn it off. And then it will turn you loose. Okay, another help is operate with a margin. That means to have something left over. You know, don't plan your schedule so tightly that when emergencies come up or kids get sick or your in-laws come into town or whatever, that you don't have any flex in your schedule to accommodate that. Just a matter of wisdom to be prepared for those things. You can do the same thing with your finances, just with your physical stamina, how to pace yourself, do that emotionally, spiritually. Just operate with a margin. The goal is to finish, not to stay busy. Another thing is do one thing at a time. Don't take on tasks that cause you to neglect the old ones. Do one thing at a time. In 2 Chronicles 31:21, it says, and every work which he began in the service of the house of God, in law and in commandment, he did with all his heart and prospered. For he got in there and slugged it out, got it done, and it prospered. Back in the 30s or the 20s, there was an industrialist who was just kind of frustrated with his system. He felt like he ought to be able to get more done. And he hired a management consultant to come work over his operation. And he said, you know, if you could just tell me something I could do to be more productive, get more done, I'd gladly pay you what it's worth. So this consultant, as he was getting on the train, handed him a piece of paper and said, okay, I'll tell you what. Every day you sit down and write down on this the things you need to get done in order of their importance. When you get the top thing done, mark it off and go into the second thing. And he laughed. And this guy said, great, you know. He hands me a piece of paper. And then that's supposed to be his big secret. Well, it wasn't, I think maybe within a month, that this consultant got a big, fat check from this industrialist. Because the guy said, I did what you said, and it really worked. That fellow was the president of Bethlehem Steel, which became a powerhouse, you know, industrially. So if it worked for him, it probably worked for us, you know, I don't know if he was a pagan or not, if he was a believer. But it worked. A daily work list. One of the things that I use in this little seven star. Yeah, I learned how. But one of the things that I use is an extra sheet. This has a schedule, a daily appointment schedule. And then there's a blank sheet in between the two pages. And I was taught this. I didn't figure this out by myself. But on this is to write down some things that need to be done. When I have patients in the hospital or at the handstand, in a little slot where I check it off and it's seen. And then if I have something specific to do, just write it down there. Or a phone call, I'll put like a C and a little blank. And when I've made the call, I'll check it off. For an errand, I'll put an E, an errand. Most of the time, it's helpful to do make a have a couple, a call and an errand. You know, to save you driving around. And make sure they've got what you want, then go. So often it's a C, comma E, you know, and check it off. Other things like P for personal or whatever. Just your own little system. But to write down a daily work list, things that you need to do. You know, I call this my paper memory, my paper brain. The problem with me is my memory is good, it's just short. So I have to write it down so that I know what I'm supposed to do. Another helpful bit is a vocabulary expander. There's a word you need to add to your vocabulary. The word no. It's a point, it's a mark of maturity to give an unqualified no. There's a little book by University Press that says how to say no. That's a good book. I recommend reading that. But if you have your goals lined out, if you know it's important, and if you're aiming toward that, then based on that, you can see if you have time to invest in things that are off track for you. And then when you know what's happening, you know, as far as where you need to give you time, you can tell people no. And you know, people are going to misunderstand you. They're thinking you might be trying to squirm out of responsibility. And you know, don't do this to use it for an excuse to do that. But if you really are aiming for priorities, and this would cause you to neglect newer responsibilities, say no. My mom had a friend when I was growing up, who was Japanese, by the way. And one time, my mother, this was a little kid, the mom was responsible for collecting some money to do something for church. Well, so I saw her get off the phone, hang up the phone, she was smiling, and she said, you know, she just told me no. But I just enjoy having her tell me no. I thought, well, what? You know, I thought she would do, just say, would say, you know, mom would give her the steel or whatever, and she'd say, no, but thank you for calling and asking me. And what she had done somehow is learned that to not major on the no, but simply to say no and then get busy thanking. You know, to express gratitude, not flattering, but really honestly, just thanking people. This is really a help. Certain activities, you know, like with your business associates or others, you just may not feel comfortable doing. And there were some guys who had asked me, I was in a new rotation in my training, and one of the guys said, hey, Corey, let's go and get a beer. Let's go out and drink and have a good time, you know. And his objective wasn't necessarily to just get me out and get me to sin. His idea was, you know, hey, let's sit down and talk, let's get to know each other. And that's what he was intending, and I appreciated that. He was really wanting to build a relationship. And I did not jump on a soapbox and say, I don't do that and all that stuff. I didn't even make it an issue. But when I still was there, no, but man, thank you. I appreciate that. And I really did. And he didn't mind having me tell him no. It wasn't a problem. But you can learn how to say that, say no, and make it constructive. So much time we have there. I think 7 minutes. Another thing is to use shortcuts and helps. There are all kinds of booklets that have how-tos in them, like how to work on your car, how to work on your house, how to do plumbing. Another thing is to utilize consultants. Man, if people can counsel you and give you guidance, boy, pick their brains. Find out what they know. They can save you lots of mistakes. When my partner and I set up our practice, we didn't know beans about business. So we had a management firm that we hired to help us. And we said, we don't know how to run a business. Can you tell us how to do that? And we've done it. It probably saved us a bunch of heartaches. there's a businessman I know who is very interested in staying current, staying well informed. But one of the things he's done is to hire a housewife to read books for him and to give him book reports. And he pays her a certain amount for each book report. Well, but this girl did. She'd been a school teacher and she had the time. And, well, her kids are bigger. Her kids are bigger. But she, I don't think, had a time, you know, deadline. But for her, it was a good deal because it was more income, something she could do at home. For him, it was a plus because he was getting information, having her read this book and getting a synopsis of it. So he just had it figured out, how to make use of both people's time.
Doctors use ghostwriters for their medical report.
Another help is learn how to make decisions in line with the will of God. If you went to the workshop that John Lee passed out on how to know the will of God, you have a good background in how to do that. If you are in God's will, then the decisions you're making are more than likely going to succeed pretty well. Because God is in the succeeding business. If you're lined up in what He's doing, then you're going to have a successful life. And you're not going to waste a lot of opportunities, lots of time. If you didn't go to John's workshop, there's still some helpful booklets, like this one by Paul Little, on affirming the will of God. There may still be some of these downstairs. I don't know. I think a lot of them went pretty fast. But know God's will. It's part of the Spirit-filled life. Do not be unwise, but wise, knowing what the will of the Lord is, firmly grasping what the will of the Lord is. Another thing is procrastination, putting things off. And we'll forget that. Okay, I'll do it now. While I was again in college, there was a classmate of mine. His name was Phil. I knew this guy in high school. And we had gotten an assignment for a term paper. It was due in about 10 weeks. And the day after we got the assignment, he was in the library booking. And I thought, Phil, come on, it's 10 weeks off. And I said, well, no, I just want to get it done, do it over with. But, yeah, he's just a gunner, you know, and all this stuff. Well, the week before the term paper was due, I was beating my head out in the library, and he was out playing tennis. He'd handed it in the week before. Well, he must have figured something out, you know. Well, you may think that you function better under pressure. You know, if you learn to panic early, then you can put the pressure on. You can. You can use the pressure early on. And that'll save you ulcers, high blood pressure, all kinds of things. And often, if you'll just get started, it will give you the motivation. If you, Ecclesiastes 11, verse 4, in the Living Bible says, if you wait for perfect conditions, you will never get anything done. So if you just get started, you'll find the motivation might just be there. Another thing is to be time conscious. If there's a big job, then look for a big block of time to get it done. Don't use a big block of time to get all sorts of little piddling things done. Save small things like little phone calls, maybe a postcard. Save little things for little spaces of time. One of the methods that I've learned as far as reviewing scriptures, you may figure that. How did you learn to memorize some of those verses? When I was, again, in college, some friends taught me to put little verses on little cards like this, and you can carry them in your pocket. And so memorize maybe a verse, or maybe two a week, you know, which is not too hard, you know. I was supposed to learn poems and all kinds of things. I could learn one verse. Plus, there were different phone numbers. There were certain girls whose phone numbers I could really remember, you know. It was a matter of motivation. But this is really handy for little time slots. I used to have a real hard time being stopped in a road when the train was coming by. And I thought, oh, this stupid train. And I said, I'll just sit here, wait for this train to go by. Well, now I thought, well, okay, I have to sit here so I can pull out a little packet and review some verses. And then as I drive to work, or my wife, when she puts on her makeup, has some cards, and she'll be putting on her makeup and reviewing some verses. And you find yourself redeeming little tiny portions of time that you would just otherwise waste. And also, you're training your thought life to be in tune with God. You can really redeem the small amounts of time just by being time conscious. Another thing is to schedule time for relaxation. Now, there are folks who are called workaholics. And if you get a hold of the schedule, you will work yourself into the hospital. So it may help you to schedule time for relaxation. And that means when it's on your schedule that you need to relax. That means you need to relax, you know. And if you know that that time is there, that'll help you work and be more productive during the other times. Even Jesus knew that. In Mark 6:31, his disciples had just come back from a grueling ministry trip. And in that he said, let's see, Mark 6:31 says, and Jesus said to them, come away by yourselves to a lonely place and rest a while. For there are many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. And so Jesus knew he needed to get those guys away to rest. He knew that. It's a good idea. Schedule time for relaxation. You need it. Another thing about getting to places on time. This is a really hard thing for me. There was an article in the Saturday Evening Post several years ago called How Never to Be Late Again. And I knew I needed that, so I cut it out and saved it. One of the ways you can plan to be places and times is to plan to be there 10 minutes early. So if you miss your time, if you're supposed to be there 10 minutes early and you get there late, then that means you got there on time. You know? It may help you to set your watch ahead just a little bit. That way, in case their watch is ahead, you'll also match their time. But at the very worst, you'll be there early and have to wait on them. You know, one of the best compliments you can give to someone is like if they plan an event or a meeting, or if they're coming to get you, give you a ride, but you're there and waiting on them. You're there early. You know, the reality is that often when we keep other people waiting on us, that what we're saying to them is, my time is more valuable than yours is. And you know, it hurts when you realize that, but it's the truth. And I know it's the truth with me. You can learn to streamline your time. If you can minimize steps, doing things like maybe ironing, you learn ways to organize yourself. Or mothers are incredible creatures. They have five arms, you know, and four ears and antennas in the back, all kinds of things. It's incredible. They can carry things in a shoulder and a knee and a, you know, ankle, and just what they can do. A lot of those are survival techniques that you had to learn in order to get things done. And you, someone else may not think you're very organized, but you get things done, and you have a system. But learn to streamline your time. And finally, as far as the tip, just let me reemphasize again the importance of a daily time alone with God. You know, if you don't have an understanding of God's will for you, then you don't have a basis for making those decisions. And you know, the part of spiritual Christian life is understanding what the will of the Lord is. And that is an outgrowth of a personal relationship with Him. It takes time to have a relationship. The summary, I told you about this letter that I wrote to a guy that told him four things. And I think, now you made me sit through this whole seminar just to hear four things. Yeah, I did. But if you do these four things, then your life will be revolutionized, especially the way you use your time. First of all, is to get to bed on time. Yeah. Second thing is to get up on time. Growing together. Third thing is to have a daily personal time alone with God. And for those of you who have little kids, it may be hard to schedule that, but you still, the main thing is to go for consistency. Whether it's 2 minutes alone with Him or what, just so it's consistent, that'll make a difference. And the fourth thing is to use a written schedule. Whether it's a blank piece of paper or whatever, something that will help you use your time.
What about time?
You'll have to determine that. You will have to arrange that, engineer.